You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 14th, 2007. Hello and welcome. My name is Bob Sprankle, and this is Bit by Bit, a podcast by teachers for teachers, talking and reflecting about the use of technology in the classroom and the changing classroom environment in the 21st century. How y'all doing? I hope your summer's going well for those of you that are experiencing summer, and hope the winter's going well for those of you experiencing winter. Hopefully this is going to be a pretty short show. Again, I wanted to stick with my summer once a week commitment that I've tried to set up. And I'll start off with my Geek of the Week right away. The Geek of the Week, and of course the links will be in the show note, this week is a shout out to Jane Hart, who has a blog site called Jane Hart's Picks. Now, this is coming from the Center for Learning and Performance Technologies, which I believe is out of Australia. And on that site, they are building a huge directory of learning tools. So that site in and of itself is really incredible, and I just discovered it recently. According to the site, it currently contains over 1,500 free and commercial tools, ranging from traditional course development tools to 21st century or e-learning 2.0 collaboration and sharing tools, as well as tools for personal learning. And they have things separated. They have some guides to choosing and using the learning tools, and they have their favorite tools. And then what Jane Hart is doing is, on her blog, she will post one e-learning tool a day in her pick of the day, which is really pretty cool. And from that, I saw what I'll reflect about today, which is a white paper called Podcasting, a Teaching with Technology white paper that she has hosted over there. So I'll provide a link to all that I just mentioned, but I'll provide the link to the white paper through Jane's site, since I found it there. An interesting paper. I really enjoyed reading it, and I suggest it to others. The thing that was nice for me was it really centered on higher education with podcasting, where, of course, as you know, coming from the elementary level. So that was good to read, to see what's being learned at that level. One thing that the paper comes out right away and says is there isn't a lot of evaluation or data about podcasting because it is so new. But in the paper, they break it down to three different categories that they see the use of podcasting for. One is lectures for review, so actually taping the lectures that are happening in the class, as supplemental material, and then also as podcasting assignments for the students. So, you know, the lectures for review, you know, simple enough, and that's been done for a long time, where teachers or students have recorded the lectures. What makes it so dynamic, the paper talks about, is, you know, you have this RSS feed. And what was interesting to me is that they found that students were more likely to use these podcasts because of RSS feeds. But some of the, you know, the usual worries were expressed in the paper that teachers have, which is, you know, they think that podcasting the lectures will have a higher absentee rate due to students just not going to class and catching the lecture later via podcast. But the paper says that, you know, there really isn't a lot of data that supports that. And then another thing that was brought up about concerns is the question of level engagement that is going to be happening because of the podcast. And, you know, it got me thinking, and it even sort of mentioned, you know, if the lectures themselves are not that engaging, now putting it out for podcasts, is that going to even make it less engaging and more dry for the students? And of course, you know, you miss that face-to-face part of the lectures or not being able to hear questions from the students, which was worthy note to think about. Another worry that I found interesting is that some people thought that, you know, providing these lectures for the students was sort of, and these are my words, spoon-feeding students, just making it a bit too easy for them to get what they needed without encouraging them to have their own accountability or responsibilities, skills that are needed, you know, out in the real world later on. And that was interesting to think about, rather than having students find a way to catch what they missed or find their own ways to study, this was sort of easily provided for them. And I thought about that, you know, for a while, because I thought, well, you know, the other side of that argument is, you know, if I'm paying all this money to a college, we know how much that can cost these days, you know, isn't it right as a student that I demand that, you know, I have this archived in some way, all this learning, and not just a one-shot deal where I go into a lecture and through my notes, I have captured that learning. I mean, for all that that a student is paying, I don't know, perhaps we have the right to be able to also get that lecture. You know, with all of this, of course, then it brings up the question, are lectures the best way to present all material? Personally, I do like a lot of lectures. Not all lecturers have engaged or inspired me, but those that have, I have enjoyed listening to those audios again. I'll go to the second part of what they talk about in the paper, and then I'll come back a little bit to the lecture as engagement thing in a moment. But one thing that seemed like a really great idea at the higher levels is to use podcasting to supplement material. In other words, to provide those lectures up front for students to hear, and then arrive at class having heard the lecture and being able to have more hands-on, face-to-face interaction in the class rather than just sit and get with the lecture. And that of course, makes a lot of sense to me. One surprise from the study was that they found that most students are not listening to these podcasts on their iPods or other portable media players, but are actually listening to them at their computers, either through the RSS feed or right off of web pages. I found that interesting, and I thought, well, I'd like to know more about that. Is that because students are multitasking at that time, perhaps working on other schoolwork at their computer, or is the computer such a ubiquitous tool that this is the medium where students are spending a lot of their time, perhaps doing other things like IMing with friends, reading news while listening to these lectures? I don't know. For me lately, I've been taking lectures or books on tape and listening to them while I'm running. And it took me a while to get to that place where I could actually run and listening and let my brain go into the actual message of the podcast without thinking about running. So now I love it. It really engages me, and I find I'm running longer because my mind is elsewhere. I'm really, in a classroom somewhere or listening to a talk. But I found that interesting. I'd like to know more about that. Another interesting thing in the article is they mention this use of recorded material first in medical school. And I'm sure you've heard about this. I have too. It was done by Dr. Michael Barrett. And this was to help students train them in hearing, and I'm going to say this wrong, but cardiac auscultation, I guess, irregular heartbeats. And what he found was with being able to listen to the recordings of these heartbeats helped his students identify at a higher rate than only having, that one-shot deal in the classroom where with so many students you would get maybe you know, 20 or 30 seconds to be able to listen to these different examples of heartbeats. And what's interesting about that, and the paper points out, is that when this was just done on CDs, when he was putting these out on CDs, you know, nobody cared. Nobody really picked up on this educational practice as something profound. The minute that it became put on iPods, then the hype and the media, you know, really began to take notice. And what the paper suggests is that we are still so wowed out about the technology that is what, you know, we're centering on rather than the educational practice. And that's very interesting, that example there, to think about that, you know, there still is this big, you know, when media looks at things, or what raises interest is the new tool rather than, you know, what's being done with it. Something to think about. Coming back to the use of podcasting for lectures, another very interesting thing that the paper brought up is that they used the Harvard Extension School as an example. And when the Harvard Extension School allowed their podcast to be open to the larger public, you know, the subscription rates went through the roof. And it was like 40% of people from other countries that were downloading these files. And they were getting all kinds of email thanking them, you know, for this these great lectures that they weren't able to get in their own country. So, you know, that is just, once again, one of the greatest things about the tool of podcasting, is that it's allowing other people that may not be able to enjoy that learning to have that learning. And I myself am going through it right now, where I'm listening to all these great talks from NEC, having not been able to be there at NEC. And I feel, you know, like I'm almost there at times and enjoying a lot of the same benefits. One thing that the article says is, you know, back to that whole hype about the technology being what we're focusing on. It says something like, too often we see the technology start the ideas of use rather than the educational goals dictate the needs of the technology. And of course, you know, I firmly believe that. I mean, one of my mantras is, you know, this is not about the technology when I talk about podcasting. And I thought about that for a lot the other day when I read this article. Because I thought, well, you know, we also have to allow for that technology to sometime inspire the learning as well. And, you know, even though I'm always saying it's not about the technology, you know, part of me is thinking, well, that technology does inspire people to think in new ways. And one idea I was thinking about is, You may have a great way of teaching in your class, and it's been working for years, and there's no reason to go and find technology to make that better, perhaps. But looking at a tool like, let's say, a student cell phone, and just seeing the tool first might be, you know, enough reason to then say, what could I apply to this tool? And the reasons for that, I would think, are that, you know, here's a tool that students are comfortable with using in their, you know, outside of school lives, and want to use in connection with their learning. And, you know, all those reasons seem to be a good idea to see how you could first start with the technology and then look out at your educational goals and make them fit. You know, if students are using those cell phones for learning, you know, they're on their own turf. They're with something that they're familiar with. They'll feel more at home, and they may be more open to other learning. So, you know, I think that there's the other side of the argument, that sometimes the tool can inspire. And then we have people in our society that see something, you know, and say, wow, I know what I could do with this. You know, I love watching my own daughter take ideas from things she finds, or, you know, discover some trash or something. And then that changes her whole writing or the learning that she's doing, and puts her in a whole nother direction. And she just did an invention camp this summer, which, of course, you know, there it is. You know, both sides were happening for these kids, where one, they had to come up with the problem, the educational goal, if you will, and then find the invention, the tool that would serve that. But then they were also taking the tools and figuring out, hey, what could we do with this? What could we do that's new? The last part, like I said, that the paper sees for podcasting use, at least at the higher levels of education, is the podcasting assignments, which, of course, I believe in the most, you know, knowing that students want to create, they want to share their ideas, and the paper talks about that dialogue is happening. They have a great example of using it, a class using it for literary criticism, where the students were, you know, reading the books and then putting out their own podcasts, or responsible for certain chapters, putting out their own podcasts, and then dialogue would start happening with those other students in their podcasts, which to me is what's so exciting about all these Web 2.0 tools. They have a great final statement in the article, which says that podcasting does not contain any inherent value. It is only valuable in as much as it helps the instructor and students reach their educational goals. Well, you know, I guess I wholeheartedly believe that. And, you know, it will be nice when we do stop focusing on the tool. And let me pause here because of the phone. Sorry about that. It will be nice when we are no longer focusing on the actual tool, like was suggested earlier in the article, that the wow of the iPod, the wow of the iPhone, or whatever it is, isn't really where the buzz is about, but what, you know, where we are centering on the learning. And, you know, I don't think we're there yet. I think we are still the kid in the candy store with all these amazing new technologies that have, you know, are being created literally overnight, and that just keeps landing in our lap. There was a quote in the article from a David Milan that I wanted to share, and podcasting's potential is not necessarily to educate better, but to educate further. And I really like that. I really like that. I mean, that's why we would pick any tool. And when you think about people from all over the world being able to hop a ride on those lectures or those courses that they wouldn't have locally, boy, that really makes sense, where you're educating further in the world, the population, further with those students to be able to have access to what they heard about in class again, and then the dialogue happening with other people. So check it out. It's an interesting article to read. I wanted to share it here. I failed to mention at the beginning who it's by. It's by Ashley Deal, out of the Office of Technology for Education and Everly Center for Teaching Excellence at Carnegie Mellon University. I will be at the November Building Learning Communities Conference next week. I'm very excited. I'm going to try to podcast as much as people are willing to let me podcast, but I'll see what I can get. And while I'm down there, I'll try to get another show up with some of that, and hopefully share some of that and educate further with those podcasts. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.